Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. Pope Francis has died, the Vatican announcing the news this morning. The Pope, born Jorge Maria Bergoglio, was 88 years old and had just spent more than a month in the hospital battling pneumonia, but was also seen briefly on the Vatican balcony over Easter weekend. ABC's Rena Roy has more on his legacy.
The former janitor and nightclub bouncer became the first Jesuit pope, the first from the New World, and the first pope ever to take the name Francis, in honor of St. Francis of Assisi, who was devoted to the poor. Pope Francis carried that dedication to the less fortunate, washing the feet of prisoners and displaying unprecedented familiarity for a pope, often opting to ride in an open-air car instead of the bulletproof Pope-mobile so he could be closer to the people, regularly stepping out to shake hands and share a tender embrace.
After a short period, cardinals will fly in from around the world to elect the next pope during the papal conclave. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Since we haven't heard Glenn Powell news in about 4 seconds, here is an update. The highly in-demand actor will co-write and star in a new comedy about a country western music star. Powell is partnering with Judd Apatow, with whom he will share writing credit for the script. Apatow, whose credits include The 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up, will direct. Powell's most recent credits were Hitman and the blockbusters Twisters and Top Gun 2. A legacy drummer is out of a job. The Who has decided to part ways with Zach Starkey after almost 30 years following a performance at the Royal Albert Hall in London. Starkey is the son of Beatles drummer Ringo Starr and the godson of original Who drummer, the late Keith Moon. Starkey apparently got into it on stage with lead singer Roger Daltrey. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Brewers and the Giants. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers kick off a long 10-day road trip tonight in San Francisco with 4 games against the Giants, 3 in St. Louis, 3 in Chicago against the White Sox. The crew won't be back until Friday, May 2nd against the Cubs. Yesterday, the Brewers rolled over the A's 14-1. Milwaukee able to steal a franchise 9 bases in 1 game. Manager Pat Murphy says that gets into an opponent's head.
Yeah, I think it rattles any team. So our young guys like to run, and they're excited about playing that type of game.
NBA, the Bucks play the Pacers tomorrow night in Indianapolis for Game 2. Milwaukee losing Game 1 over the weekend. College football, the Badgers wrapping up spring practice with a scrimmage in Madison. Defensive coordinator Mike Tressel.
We did not stop the run the way we need to. The mentality of stopping the run is first. The physicality of this game of football, which is what this place has always been around. And then you can get into some of the schematic things.
That's Wisconsin's Mike Tressel with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding. Just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, Laura Bird is back. The author and tireless bookstore promoter helps mark Independent Bookstore Day with ways you can support a local business.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy and breezy this morning. Gradual clearing, and the wind will gradually die down here by later this afternoon. Our high in the low 50s today. Tonight, mostly clear this evening with clouds increasing after midnight, our low 34. Tomorrow, a few sprinkles, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid 50s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 34.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
More than 600 international students and recent grads have had their visas revoked. Here's people that are here 100% legally. We've seen the ICE checklist. Do you wear a Chicago Bulls hoodie? Do you have a tattoo? Check, check, gone. Again, this is about due process and following the Constitution. And if we don't have that, then none of us are safe.
The Todd Albaugh Show, moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and on the app. Earl Ingram.
It's Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show, and I'm dedicating this episode to you, the listeners. Your voices matter, and I want to hear how significantly we influence your lives.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings at 9.
Good morning and welcome to the Midwest Farm Report. I'm Stephanie Hoff, along with you on a Monday. I hope everyone had a good weekend. I certainly did. I got to spend Easter with extended family in southeast Iowa. We stayed with my very sharp, very hip, great aunt. She's 96 years old, and she still puts out a great spread for Easter. Cheesy potatoes and ham for the whole family. So that was pretty special. Another exciting part of the trip was that my mom, my sister, and myself, we drove the 8-hour trip in an electric vehicle. Now, let me tell you, electric cars need chargers, and the selection in rural Iowa is limited. So we had a few close calls with a low battery, but obviously made it home in time. I'm here with you this morning, so it did work out. It was a fun little experiment after the fact to road trip in an electric car. I was very happy to be back in my gas-powered vehicle this morning. Easter Sunday was pretty soggy in most areas of the state, and that's really how the weekend started. Linda from Reeseville, Dennis in Brownsville, and Butch from Alto, they all started the holiday with rainfall amounts ranging from a tenth to a quarter. Mark Jones Farm in Fitchburg saw the same. I expect more rainfall reports to come flooding in, no pun intended, this morning. I saw a lot of standing water on my way to work in the wee hours this morning. Let us know what's in your rain gauge. Just text me your name, where you are, and the amount at 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-FARM. 3276. The weather just scratches the surface of all we get to talk about today. Stick around.
When you're checking out the dairy industry in Australia and New Zealand, you don't see a lot of barns. You see some milk sheds, but not a lot of barns. I'm Bob Bosol from the northern end of the world's longest barn, which is really long now because it's all the way over here in New Zealand. But we're going to talk with a dairy farmer, an entrepreneur, I should say, maybe more than a dairy farmer, Chris Adams from Brightview Farms. And Chris, when we started visiting, here we are on the South Island, you said, we're not at the end of the world, but you can see it from here.
Yep, you're right down at the very, very bottom of the world. We call it but something nowhere.
How far are we from the South Pole, Antarctica?
Oh, it's a big drive down to there. In fact, you can't drive, but we're only an hour and a half from the bottom of New Zealand.
And what does that mean weather-wise, then, for the year?
We get good winters, meaning we get snow, frosts, and summers we get a bit of everything. We can have four seasons in one day, but where I live, we grow grass all year round, except for June, July, which is our winter.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about dairy, because dairy is king in New Zealand as far as agriculture is concerned, taking over from sheep. Is that right? The dairy industry is the big guy.
Yeah, it was all sheep in New Zealand. It was only 30, 40 years ago, New Zealand had over 70 million sheep. We're down to 20 million sheep now, and the dairy cows have gone up. Unfortunately for sheep, there is just no money in them. We lose money on the wool part of it, shearing it off. So now the best value for money on a farm is milking dairy cows.
And that's the map you followed with your farming program. No more sheep on the farm, but how many dairy cattle and how many dairy farms down in this part of the world?
So I did have 10,000 sheep, now down to 20 sheep, milking 1,800 dairy cows, and I actually don't know how many dairy farmers there are down here, but the numbers grew exponentially over 20 years from the mid-1990s to the early 2000s.
Are these locals like yourself who grew up in this area that are running these dairy farms? Are you getting international money in here, or are you getting people from other countries coming in here to dairy?
So in the 1990s, we had a lot of Dutch dairy farmers come over to farm where we were and convert sheep farms to dairy farms. And a lot of the north of the North Island of New Zealand, they had a lot of smaller dairy farms there. There were 80 to 100 cows. So they came down here and bought bigger land parcels to milk 300 to 500 cows was pretty common in the 1990s.
Now we're going to talk about your operation, but first of all, I have to ask you, for years and years and years, we battled the New Zealand Dairy Board. Very, very aggressive they were in exporting New Zealand dairy products. What's the status now? Is there still a New Zealand Dairy Board? And what sets the parameters for pricing and exporting of New Zealand dairy?
As a child, I remember the Button Mountains, and you know, New Zealand had butter stored everywhere and we couldn't sell it. And you Americans complained a lot about us poor wee New Zealanders down here. The dairy board is pretty much gone. We have a big cooperative called Fonterra that was set up by the government to set regulations that they had to accept milk from every farmer who wanted to supply them. And now we just supply to the open market around the world. No subsidies. No farmer in New Zealand gets any farming subsidies. So it's up to us to sink or swim and the companies we supply to make enough money for us to survive.
Now, can you contract, like in the United States, we can contract our milk out months and months and kind of secure a price. Can you do that, or are you just responsive to what they will pay on a monthly basis?
Up until probably 5 years ago, it was just whatever we took, whatever we got. Milk futures is a new thing to New Zealand. I know in America, wheat futures have been around for probably 100 years. So the milk futures are a new game for New Zealand. There's a percentage of people use them, including me. But as a whole, we just take the market on the day.
What kind of price are you getting now? You're in pretty good shape, aren't you?
This year is the best we've ever had for dairy milk price here. We get paid in milk solids in New Zealand. So that's when you take the water out of the milk and it's at a crude percentage, it's about 10% milk, 90% water. So we're getting paid $10 a kilo for our milk solids at the moment.
And that adds up to a pretty nice milk check.
It's never been so good. And same with the beef byproduct. Beef is an all-time high. So if you're in the dairy game, it's good at the moment. It's been pretty tough up until the last 12 months. The 3 years before were very difficult.
Has that influenced your breeding program on your dairy animals to maybe fit that beef market a little bit as well as make sure you got enough replacements?
Yeah, we're a high-producing farm, so we've decided that next season coming up, we're going to go 20% of our top cows in sex semen and the bottom 20% in beef. Actually, that's a lie. That was what we did last year, was 20% top was in sexed and the bottom 20 in beef. We're going to go 40%. The top 40% of our cows will be sexed semen to the best genetics we can find, and the bottom 40% will go to beef straws.
Now, you're very conscious of production and what makes production. Genetics or nutrition? Which one is more important, or are they about the same as your mind?
No, it's definitely nutrition. As a boy growing up, I was told by an old-timer that it's 80% feeding, 20% breeding. It's probably maybe 70% feeding now, 30% breeding. But I want to be in the top 5% of producers, so I'm trying to get better genetics to go with the feed. It also comes down to the team on my farm, the staff that are milking the cows. They can make or break a farm with the same amount of feed. If you've got good staff members that look after the cows, and the cows like them, they produce milk.
Your genetics are different than ours. Your cows here aren't as big, and you got some Jersey influence, but I would imagine that's partly because of the milk solids. The Jerseys will give you more components in your milk, and you don't like them as big as our big Holsteins, or what kind of things are you looking at?
So our cows are wintered out, summer and wintered outside, so we have no barns in New Zealand. So the big Holsteins for my heavy soils are just too big. So we've gone for a breed called a Kiwi Cross, which is the Friesian across a Jersey, to produce what should be a jet black cow. You don't get it. It gives you a bit more of the bulk milk of the Friesian and the milk fat, higher milk fat of the Jersey, to get a medium-sized cow on our heavy soils. That gives us higher percentage milk, fat, and more volume.
You find you get a lot of hybrid vigor there from that kind of a cross?
We found the hybrid vigor was very, very good. It may have dropped off a wee bit now because we've been crossing the same cross for probably two, three generations of cows coming through in my situation. But we try and bring in new genetics from different breeding every few years. So we're pretty happy with where we've got to. Our big thing is udder confirmation now because we're getting a lot more milk. So we need to make sure that the cows can handle that.
What kind of nutrition? I mean, I know they're on grass, but what kind of supplements do you use? When and how far into the lactation, age of the cows?
So we're probably at a guess about 75-80% grass all year round, just grass in the paddock that the cows walk in and eat. We do pre-mow a lot of our pastures in the late spring, summer grasses, and then we feed them the palm kernel extract, which is the byproduct of palm oil, DDG, which is dried distiller's grain, the byproduct of beer, which is a favourite of mine because I drink the beer and the cows eat the grain.
So you have no shortage of that around here?
No. We like a beer in New Zealand. And then we use what we call wheat here, but you call corn over there as well, and a bit of soya over calving and into the start of mating to just give that a little extra bit of zing.
Get a little bonus out of that soybean right now with the price, right?
Yeah, just with America and China having a wee bit of a, we'll call it a lover's tiff. Soya has dropped in price, so it's probably dropped about 20% on the market in the last few months. So I've contracted some, may get lower, but at the price at the moment, we're happy.
Talk about your cows, because especially your first calf, second calf heifers, you don't push them real hard, maybe like we do. When they're fresh, they go into the milking herd, but you have a different philosophy.
Yeah, I did a course on nutrition with a very smart man, and our younger first calving animals, they're hurting after they've had their first calf for the next few months, and we want to get them back in calf within 2 or 3 months. So we only once a day milk our first calvers for probably 8 to 10 weeks after they calve and make sure they've had a couple of cycles before we twice a day milk them. And I could say it's probably one of the better decisions I've made animal-wise on my farm because their longevity is so much better. Their empty rates as a second calver have literally plummeted. So we're down to about 3-4% of our second calvers, or our first calvers, being empty to go into second calvers. The loss we made on that once-a-day milking for the 8 to 10 weeks is made up tenfold.
Dairying in New Zealand, where dairy is now king, taking over from the sheep, as Chris Adams said, from Brightview Farms on the southern island of New Zealand. I'm Bob Bosold.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Matt Nair on air.
Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters talking about the SAVE Act.
The kind of voter fraud that this SAVE Act is targeting would be non-citizen voter fraud.
There is no evidence of this. Zero.
Non-citizens, no. They're not eligible to vote.
There is no reason to increase these restrictions on voting except to stop people who might not vote for them.
Matt Nair on air. Moving soon to its new time. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Starr joins us here on Nightlight. Your timing, good fellas, Mike. What you just said was an ad lib to De Niro. He's like security. You're like, you're looking at him.
Well, that whole scene was improvised. And wow. He said, make sure you don't call it ad libbing. It's improvisation. It was quite a process that Martin Scorsese put us through over a few days that it would come out like that. It wasn't just like, hey, how you doing?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on WLAKradio.com/contest-terms.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on air.
Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we'll talk about the price of oil with Mr. Global and what that means for consumers. Hour number two, we'll talk about organ donation. I hope you join us.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings at 10. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
This morning, she read her rain gauge. She had about an inch of rain since Friday morning. What are you seeing, Stu?
Well, I've got my friend John over here near Armstrong, who's a 6/10 over the weekend. And then I looked west and draw a line from La Crosse up to Eau Claire. And most reports in that area are an inch and a quarter, an inch and 28 hundredths here and there. That's where some of the heaviest rain has been. Further off to the northwest, there's even some light snow this morning. But we are indeed still in a precipitation event as low pressures around southwest Wisconsin, northeast Iowa. It's going to push northeast through the Badger State today. The radar indicating rainfall, especially in about the western third of Wisconsin and off in the far northeast part of the state and over into eastern parts of Minnesota up to Lake Superior and north. Snow in far northwest Wisconsin, snow, freezing rain in the Arrowhead of Minnesota. That activity will be confined a little further west and north as that low pushes northeast through the state today. Oh, we'll all have some rain chance. Not going to be very heavy in many locations. The west, central, to northwest part of the state could be the spot where rain is even heavier during the day today. Then that low pulls away. Great, we get a break, right? No, another system moves in very quickly, moving right up out of the west, and I'd expect another chance of some rain a little later Tuesday and into Tuesday night, a little later Wednesday into Wednesday night as well. None of these are going to be huge amounts of rain, not big producers, a tenth of an inch or two on and off. But if you get the picture, I expect this week to be a little more on the damp side. Rain to start us off, then rain again later Tuesday, later Wednesday. Temperatures will moderate considerably, well above normal Wednesday. But once that low pressure system clears through Wednesday night, I'd expect we cool off and, in fact, start talking about those daytime highs back in the lower 60s by the end of the week. I'll have those forecast details right after this.
When it comes to protecting your corn roots from rootworm, Stealth is your best defense. BioStealth is a bioinsecticide that uses cutting-edge microbial technology to create an invisible barrier that hides the corn roots from rootworm while nurturing the beneficial organisms your crops need to survive. Backed by the power of Provider PM, it fortifies your plants and strengthens root systems for healthier, more resilient crops. Learn more at newfieldsag.com. BioStealth with Provider PM from Newfields Ag. Innovation in your fields.
Rural Mutual Assurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Get insurance from a company who knows Wisconsin and cares about your community. You may know Rural Mutual Insurance as the number one farm insurer, but did you know they also offer competitive home and auto rates? Visit ruralmutual.com to learn more about products and discounts.
Rural Mutual Assurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
You said a little, maybe a little snow in some areas. So slickery roads out there, or is that not much of a concern because the temps are pretty mild?
The temps are pretty mild. I'd say wet roads most likely. Oh, there'll be that couple of spots somewhere way in far northwest Wisconsin. I mean, we're looking up toward the far northwest part of the state up near Lake Superior. A little rain holding on in western Wisconsin yet this morning. Elsewhere, just a slight chance. More clouds in store today, breezy and a little cooler. Upper 40s in the north, at best low 50s in the south. And those west winds will be stronger, 10 to 20 gusts near 30 today. We do stand a better chance to clear it out tonight. A little rain way in the north or a few snowflakes. Temps in the nighttime falling back into the 30s, closer to 30 north, upper 30s south. Northwest winds become a little more variable, still about 5 to 15. A little break Tuesday. A better chance some sun could shine in, but there'll be a shower possibility, even a thunderstorm later in the day. Temps pushing up through the 50s, maybe a 60 in the south. And then by Wednesday, certainly we're going to talk more mild air. Low 70s in the south, Stephanie. Maybe only up around 60 in the north, but some showers, even thunderstorms again Wednesday into Wednesday night. So kind of damp here yet through the week.
A little soggy out there. But hey, that U.S. drought monitor, that should update after the Easter holiday today. And we'll see if some of those areas in the state have seen some drought relief, particularly southwest Wisconsin. That's your Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update. Compeer Financial is your financial partner. They're committed to agriculture and rural America. You can check them out at Compeer.com. Coming up next, Wisconsin had a successful maple syrup season, and Wisconsin's dairy industry is already looking forward to June Dairy Month. We'll talk about it next.
This, you're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While corrosive democracy news from Washington continued this week, state news ranged from good in Delaware and Mississippi, mixed in North Carolina and Pennsylvania, to downright ugly in New Hampshire. Voting Rights Lab reports the Delaware Senate advanced SB 2 and SB 3, constitutional amendments allowing 10 days of early voting and no excuse absentee voting. Legislative versions of both bills passed last year, but the Delaware Supreme Court found that the state constitution didn't enable them. The General Assembly must pass them again next year for them to be adopted. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered Mississippi to redraw state Senate districts for DeSoto County, which it found violated the 1965 Voting Rights Act by diluting a majority black section of the county, according to Mississippi Today. State officials in North Carolina found fewer issues among the 5,000 military and overseas voters than the Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin claimed, but the highly questionable post-election review of voter eligibility continues. Pennsylvania Attorney General Dave Sunday appealed a federal court ruling directing county officials to count otherwise eligible mail-in ballots without a date. The New Hampshire Senate advanced SB 213, which would require voters applying by mail for an absentee ballot to enclose a copy of their birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers, almost certainly disenfranchising otherwise eligible voters. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
And from Chippewa Falls.
What are Republicans voting for? If they're not voting for Medicare, Medicaid, clean energy, clean water.
Tax cuts for billionaires. You wouldn't get a lot of votes for that. So you have to create an enemy. And somebody says, blame all these people like women and immigrants and black and brown folks. Your brain will sometimes want to accept that because it's the easiest of off ramps to all of the anxiety and existential fear that you've got.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 4 until 6 on Civic Media and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabe, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. Pope Francis has died, the Vatican announcing the news this morning. The Pope, born Jorge Maria Bergoglio, was 88 years old and had just spent more than a month in the hospital battling pneumonia, but was also seen briefly on the Vatican balcony over Easter weekend. ABC's Rena Roy has more on his legacy.
The former janitor and nightclub bouncer became the first Jesuit pope, the first from the New World, and the first pope ever to take the name Francis in honor of St. Francis of Assisi, who was devoted to the poor. Pope Francis carried that dedication to the less fortunate, washing the feet of prisoners and displaying unprecedented familiarity for a pope, often opting to ride in an open-air car instead of the bulletproof Pope-mobile so he could be closer to the people, regularly stepping out to shake hands and share a tender embrace.
After a short period, cardinals will fly in from around the world to elect the next pope during the papal conclave. This is ABC News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The new Star Wars film officially has a title, and it's called Star Wars Starfighter. The film's lead actor will be Ryan Gosling, and it will be directed by Sean Levy, whose previous credits include, well, pretty much everything. Levy has directed the recent smash Deadpool and Wolverine, all three Night at the Museum films, and executive produced Stranger Things. Gosling's last big film was The Fall Guy, so I'm sure he's eager to wash that taste out of his mouth. Star Wars Starfighter hits theaters May 28th of 2027. There is something about podcasts that seems to help celebrities open up. Emilio Estevez recently appeared on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. Host Josh Horowitz asked The Outsiders actor what the worst note he ever got from a director was. Estevez says, on the set of St. Elmo's Fire, director Joel Schumacher screamed at the top of his lungs, "Have a good bleeping time." Estevez says Schumacher was a bully and wildly insecure. He also made a very mediocre Batman movie. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Brewers and the Giants. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers kick off a long 10-day road trip tonight in San Francisco with four games against the Giants, three in St. Louis, three in Chicago against the White Sox. The crew won't be back until Friday, May 2nd against the Cubs. Yesterday, the Brewers rolled over the A's 14-1. Milwaukee able to steal a franchise nine bases in one game. Manager Pat Murphy says that gets into an opponent's head.
Yeah, I think it rattles any team. So our young guys like to run, and they're excited about playing that type of game.
NBA, the Bucks play the Pacers tomorrow night in Indianapolis for Game 2. Milwaukee losing Game 1 over the weekend. College football, the Badgers wrapping up spring practice with a scrimmage in Madison. Defensive coordinator Mike Tressel.
We did not stop the run the way we need to. The mentality of stopping the run is first. The physicality of this game of football, which is what this place has always been around. And then you can get into some of the schematic things.
That's Wisconsin's Mike Tressel with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee Film Festival program director Kirsten Larson, and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison discusses their new lineup. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy and breezy this morning, gradual clearing, and the wind will gradually die down here by later this afternoon. Our high in the low 50s today. Tonight, mostly clear this evening with clouds increasing after midnight, our low 34. Tomorrow, a few sprinkles, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid 50s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 33.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Barrio. Could coal make a comeback in Wisconsin? Pollution and high costs have pushed utilities to start shutting down coal plants across the state. But the Trump administration has announced emergency orders to boost coal, including offering power plants a two-year exemption from requirements to reduce emissions of toxic chemicals like mercury, arsenic, and benzene. April 22nd marks the 55th anniversary of Earth Day. Back in 1970, Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson called for an environmental day of action that inspired 20 million Americans to take to the streets and demand protections from environmental contamination. Less than 8 months later, Congress created the EPA. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into environmental issues in Wisconsin, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nothing you could say could tear me away from my dog. My dog is Shallow, y'all. Hi, I'm Smokey Robinson. When you adopt a shelter pet, you not only bring joy and love into your home, you also give another animal the chance to experience that special bond. Join me in supporting American Humane Society and their incredible work to help our most vulnerable friends. Together, we can make a real difference. Donate today at AmericanHumane.org.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross, calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. The Todd Albaugh Show.
More than 600 international students and recent grads have had their visas revoked. Here's people that are here 100% legally. We've seen the ICE checklist. Do you wear a Chicago Bulls hoodie? Do you have a tattoo? Check, check, gone. Again, this is about due process and following the Constitution. And if we don't have that, then none of us are safe.
The Todd Albaugh Show, moving soon to its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on WLAKradio.com/contest-terms. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Welcome back on a Monday morning. I'm Stephanie Hoff along with you. This is the Midwest Farm Report. Don't forget that we want to hear from you on what you're seeing out your window. We'll get our next crop progress and condition report this afternoon from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. But I want to know from you, what does field work look like in your area? How much rain have you gotten? Let us know at 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. So what is today good for? Let's check the Old Farmer's Almanac. On Monday, April 21st, the Old Farmer's Almanac says it's a good day to quit smoking and start a weight loss diet. If those were things you wanted to do this year, today's the day to start. The Old Farmer's Almanac bases this on the moon phase. So according to the moon, it's also a good day to perm your hair or wean animals. And there you have it. Those two don't go as well together, but if it's on your to-do list, today's the day. I know it's only April, but the work is already underway to prepare for June Dairy Month. Charity Seebecker has the details of this Wisconsin tradition.
June Dairy Month is a special time to discover, taste, and support the living legacy of Wisconsin's dairy industry. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and this month's check-in with Dairy Checkoff, we are connecting with Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Director for District 3, Gary Cohn, representing Lincoln, Oneida, Price, and Taylor counties to learn how Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin works to market and promote Wisconsin dairy. So, Gary, tell us about the importance of June Dairy Month in Wisconsin.
Dairy farming has been a key to Wisconsin's community and economy. As dairy farmers, we care for our animals, land, and water with the tradition of, you know, stewardship and dedication. And across Wisconsin, farms have been shaped by the hard work of previous generations. And today, we've been striving to leave the even better for the next generation. And in Wisconsin, 99% of the farms are family-owned.
Can you tell us a little bit more now on the history of June Dairy Month? I don't think people realize how long this has been going on.
Yeah, June Dairy Month has been around a long time, but it started out as a national milk month in 1937 to promote the drinking of milk. And it was initially created to stabilize the dairy demand with a production that was a surplus, but it has evolved into an annual tradition that celebrates the contributions that dairy communities continue to make in the world.
You come from a farm that is family-owned, like the 99% of dairy farms in Wisconsin. Give me a brief kind of overview of what your farm background is.
I've been born and raised on a farm, and the farm we're on now, I farm with my son, and we run a 120-cow dairy, run about 700 acres, and we run a freestall parlor operation. Pretty much raise all of our own crops.
So I'm sure as a farmer, you celebrate Wisconsin dairy every day. But as we celebrate Wisconsin dairy statewide, what is your favorite part?
It, As dairy farmers, it gives us the opportunity to celebrate Wisconsin, and it's been a leading in dairy, setting a standard for high quality milk and the conservation and sustainability and animal care that farmers show to the communities.
Absolutely. I grew up on a dairy farm as well, so I know exactly what you're talking about. We, eat, sleep, breathe it, live it every day, but it's exciting to get to share that with others throughout the state during June Dairy Month specifically, to highlight just all that we're doing behind the scenes to produce high quality produce. So what does it mean to you to be a Wisconsin dairy farmer?
I guess it's great to work with the land and the cattle, and hopefully at the end of the day, my next generation wants to take it over, and I strive to leave the land in better place than what I've got it.
And as you're serving as the District 3 director, if you could tell consumers or even the farmers one thing about the work that you guys are doing at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, what would it be?
Promotion, promoting the dairy products and cheese, just getting the word out there and getting the good product, good quality cheese and dairy products, and letting the rest of the country and world know that we've got in Wisconsin.
And what is your favorite June Dairy Month activity?
Participating in dairy breakfast, just going to visit the people and see how excited they are to actually come out to the farms and see what we're doing.
So where can listeners go to find a local dairy breakfast location, the date if they're coming to Wisconsin, or maybe they're in Wisconsin trying to figure out their summer travel plans, or even just to learn more about Wisconsin's dairy industry?
Well, I guess I would encourage everybody, to discover the taste and support their local dairy farmers during June Dairy Day at their local dairy farms. And the breakfast can be located by visiting wisconsindairy.org/JDM. And that should get you to the website where and show you where your local breakfasts are at.
That's Gary Cohn, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Director for District 3, joining us for this month's Check-In with Dairy Checkoff. While June may seem a little far off yet, it will be here before you know it. So in the meantime, explore local June Dairy Month events, discover different ways to celebrate Wisconsin's dairy industry all year round, and see why this tradition is so beloved by dairy enthusiasts across the state. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
I love being America's Dairyland, and we sure are proud of our dairy commodities. As we start getting ready for the season of dairy breakfasts and ice cream, we wrap up the season of another important crop in Wisconsin. I'm talking about maple syrup. Our own Ben Jarbo catches up with a maple syrup producer who says while the sap collection is finished, the work to make the quality product continues year-round.
Sap collection in the state is coming to a close after about a month of production. And I was able to catch back up with Jim Adamski with the Adamski Sugar Bush to see how the season turned out and what the next steps are for the summer.
In Wisconsin, most of the production areas have concluded production here this last week. There's a few in the far northern parts of Wisconsin that are going to be probably producing here through the weekend. But for the most part, just about everybody in the state here is wrapping up. Crop-wise, depending on where you were in the state, we were probably looking at between 75 and 110% of the crop. So, like I say, it really depends on the specific region that you were producing in. Some areas did a little better than others. So,
and overall this year, I mean, for your sugar bush, how much did you end up producing this year?
So at our sugar bush, we were at probably right around 70% of a crop at our sugar bush. We were just a little bit lighter. And we did get tagged with that ice storm up in northeast Wisconsin where we are producing. So we did end up with a fair bit of tree damage and loss of power for, several days in our woodlots so that we couldn't run. So,
and to go along with the ice, I know at least down here we had a couple of pretty warm weeks. Was that happen up there at all, or did that affect any of the production?
Yeah, so we had some warm weather early on in March. There's two ways a maple tree breaks dormancy. One is hours of daylight. The second is heat. As our spring days get longer, our trees, start to break dormancy just based on hours of daylight. And then the heat that comes along with it, that kind of accelerates the process. So, by the time we were getting to the tail end of March here, our syrup was getting a little bit more of a stronger flavor.
And then as we entered into that first part of April here, you know, depending on where you're producing in the state, you know, that syrup can pick up that off flavor or that buddy flavor as the trees go from dormancy into bud break.
And I know you're saying it started picking up more flavor. Was it more that buddy flavor there near the end?
Yeah, so you get more of a strong, robust flavor as the syrup typically gets darker on the tail end of season. And then as our trees go from dormancy toward bud break, then we end up with a little bit of, that buddiness that we can pick up in that late season syrup. So,
was the season about the same length as it has been in previous years, or did you have to cut it a bit shorter due to that buddy flavor?
No, from a yield perspective or a total crop point of view, like I say, depending on where you were in the state, you know, anywhere is between 75 and 110% of a crop. So I would say the yield is, like I say, just, you know, very, very similar to an average year. So,
and now that the tapping season and the syrup season is done here, well, what do you do with the trees to help just make sure they're healthy throughout this summertime?
So what we do typically right at the end of season is we make sure that right after production is done, we get out there and remove the taps from the trees right away. That reduces the amount of staining that takes place in the tree and lets that tree start healing itself and getting itself on track for the next production year.
We should have plenty of tasty maple syrup to put on our pancakes and waffles all summer long.
That's certainly good news from Ben Jarbo. I might have to get a waffle after the show wraps up this morning. That sounds pretty good. So we talked maple syrup and dairy. How about we take a look at corn and soybean prices from Chicago? Grain is trading mostly higher as we come out of a three-day weekend in the marketplace. Cash corn is up 3.25 cents at 485.5. December new crop corn is up 1.5 cents at 467.5. Cash soybeans are up 4 cents at 1040.5. November new crop soybeans are up 3.25 cents, trading at 1035.75. The only thing trading lower this morning is July new crop wheat. That's down a quarter of a cent at 562 a bushel. Moving on to our dairy markets, the May Class 3 milk contract is sitting neutral at $18.30 a hundredweight. The June contract is up 13 cents at $17.56. Up next, high-speed internet is a necessity in today's workplace, education, and entertainment. We'll find out how close Wisconsin is to getting everyone connected.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding. Just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Starr joins us here on Nightlight. Your timing, Goodfellas, Mike. What you just said was an ad-lib to De Niro. He's like, security, and you're just like, you're looking at him.
Well, that whole scene was improvised. And Paul Hip, he said, make sure you don't call it ad-libbing. It's improvisation. It was quite a process that Martin Scorsese put us through over a few days that it would come out like that. It wasn't just like, hey, how you doing?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
When a parent sees their child smile, they see hope. Aleem hoped that his son Rajib would have an easier life than he had. You see, Rajib, just like his father, was born with a cleft. But thanks to Smile Train, both father and son received free, life-changing surgeries, transforming their smiles into symbols of hope. To learn more and support the global cleft community, visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, changing the world one smile at a time.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll review the weekend news. And Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media Sports Director, will be here to talk about changes coming to the WIAA. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
To fruition, our own Ben Jarbo catches up with one of the entities in charge of achieving that goal.
For the past few years, there has been a broadband expansion project going on here in the state of Wisconsin. I was able to have a chat with Alyssa Kenny, the Wisconsin Public Service Commission Director of Broadband and Digital Equity, to see how this project is coming along and what we can expect in the future.
Since 2014, the state has had a small state grant program, and then kind of starting with Governor Evers in 2019 or so, they really ramped up that state program. So it had had just a couple million dollars in it, and then 24 million. And then once the pandemic hit, a lot of the American Rescue Plan Act dollars were allocated to broadband. So we saw another 100 million of federal dollars plus 100 million of state. So there's been state dollars and a state broadband office in Wisconsin for a long time. That said, the thing that people are often most interested about right now is the BEAD program, which was part of the Infrastructure Act, and that's the federal dollars. Some people call it Internet for All. Some folks call it BEAD, but that's the $1 billion that's coming from the federal government, has been allocated and obligated to the state of Wisconsin to really, we like to say, kind of finish the job. We've been working really hard at it with our foot on the gas for a long time, but this is money meant for really those most difficult to serve last locations that still either both have no broadband and have no broadband kind of in progress or coming.
Well, if we look at that, you're mentioning the last ones about how much of the state now has broadband and how much is left to still get it.
There's about 450,000 locations in the state that don't have broadband right now. Of that 450,000, 250,000 of those locations are in progress. We've got a grant, we've got a federal subsidy program, but we know they're contracted to be built, and there is a commitment by a provider to do it. So there's a lot of folks that don't have it, but there's a lot of folks about to get it or that, you know, that are in the queue. And then there's 200,000 locations or so that really these additional federal dollars are to connect. And so those are locations that don't have it. When I say don't have it, I mean maybe they don't have it at all, but more often in the state of Wisconsin, we really see what I would call like an adequacy problem. They don't have enough to really fully participate. They can't do all the things that people with better broadband can. But that number is about 200,000 locations in the state.
And through this time, as you were mentioning, you're kind of getting close to the end of having Wisconsin, I guess, all broadbanded up. So what would be the next steps after that?
Well, I do want to be really careful to say, particularly because it snowed at my house this morning, a commitment to build broadband and really getting it to that last household is a many year long project, right? And our construction seasons, particularly north of Highway 10, they're not super forgiving for construction, and a lot of the broadband in the state goes underground. So getting the commitment to get it done and getting it done is probably, there's going to be 4 or 5 years of ongoing construction. And in that time, there'll probably be a little churn. Some grants might not work out. Some providers might change. And so I think there'll still be some significant ongoing need. And I've been at this job for 5 years. And in the 5 years I've been here, the goalposts for how we define broadband have changed twice, right? And so we're working really hard to, I don't know, what do they say, like skate to the puck? But we're working really hard to spend the right amount of public dollars, but also be thinking about how can we make sure we're investing enough so this is going to work really great for everybody in 10 years. But I do think there's always going to be some folks in some locations in the state that are going to need improvements and upgrades. And then there's just also a lot of work to be done around internet can be really expensive for some households, and we have to do what we can to make sure and that it's affordable, and communities are figuring out ways for low-income families to access it, whether it be libraries or schools or checkout devices or public computer labs. And there's some people in the state that still need a little extra help to get online. They need a little technical assistance, or they might need some actual hands-on people to really support them to get online. A lot of people in the state have been left behind on making full use of the internet, and so they might need a little bit of skills training.
Kenny says that they are still some years away from getting broadband through the whole state of Wisconsin, but they hope to be able to one day connect every person so no one falls behind. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Thanks, Ben. That wraps up the Midwest Farm Report Hour. I'm Stephanie Hoff. Happy to be with you while I fill in for Farm Director Pam Yonke. Thanks for tagging along with us on a Monday. Charity Seebecker will sit in the big chair tomorrow.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
This message is sponsored by WiscCaregiver.com. Now is the time to start a meaningful career as a caregiver. Make a real difference in people's lives. WiscCaregiver.com gives you two great options for free. Train for the in-demand caregiver workforce as a CDCP, Certified Direct Care Professional, or become a CNA, Certified Nurse Aide. All training is free. Plus, you can earn a $500 bonus. Learn more. Visit WiscCaregiver.com.
The start of a series making a case for genetically modified foods today on Farm to Fork.
Hey there, it's Mike Rowe, and if you're out there getting dirty, do me a favor and remember to call or click 811 before you dig. And when I say dig, I refer to any activity requiring boring, tilling, drilling, probing, reaming, plowing, drudging, or even scoping. Anything that causes you to roll up your sleeves a little and dig in requires you to first connect with 811 so that you can avoid all those buried pipes, wires, and cables underground. To sum up, call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more information.
All-terrain vehicles have become standard equipment on farms and ranches. While useful for work, they're also recreational, but they can pose a safety issue for kids in particular. Make sure operators wear helmets and are schooled in safe use. High-speed crashes and rollovers can be avoided. Farm safety and health is everyone's business. This reminder is brought to you by Farm to Fork through the generous support of listeners like you across the country. Learn how you can help at NorthShoreProductions.com. Genetically modified products, food in particular, get a bad rap. That's according to Sir Richard Roberts, a Nobel Prize-winning British biochemist and molecular biologist.
Now, the term genetically modified is really misleading. Every life form on this planet has been genetically modified by evolution. You know, we didn't start looking like this. We started out as bacteria.
While the term genetic modification is relatively new, Roberts says its practice is not new at all.
Plant and animal breeding has been practiced for generations, for as long as we can say. You take two plants, you cross them, you get genes from both plants mixing. That's genetic modification.
In fact, says Roberts, every one of us is a genetic modification.
When we have a child, that child is genetically modified. It's got some genes from mom, it's got some genes from dad. And to try and pretend that this is something totally unnatural, to mix genes and so on, is ridiculous.
Roberts spoke recently at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, Canada. The fuss over GM technologies has been going on for some time, and he's been around for a lot of that. He'll be back tomorrow to share more. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Darrell Anderson.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, Laura Bird is back. The author and tireless bookstore promoter helps mark Independent Bookstore Day with ways you can support a local business.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. Matt Nair on air.
Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters talking about the SAVE Act.
The kind of voter fraud that this SAVE Act is targeting would be non-citizen voter fraud.
There is no evidence of this. Zero.
Non-citizens, no. They're not eligible to vote.
There is no reason to increase these restrictions on voting except to stop people who might not vote for them.
Matt Nair on air. Moving soon to its new time. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabba, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. Messages coming in from around the world on the death of Pope Francis. King Charles says he and the Queen are deeply saddened. Australia's Prime Minister giving thanks for the life of the Holy Father. Vice President J.D. Vance issuing a statement saying his heart goes out to the millions of Christians around the world who loved him. ABC's Marcus Moore is in Rome with more on Vance's meeting with the Pope over the weekend.
Pope Francis met privately with Vice President J.D. Vance, who was visiting Rome during Holy Week with his family. The Vatican press office says the two met for several minutes and exchanged Easter greetings. In a post on X, the vice president writing in part, quote, "It was an honor to be in Rome on this Holy Week."
In New York, ABC News contributor Father James Martin.
He celebrated Easter with the faithful, and now he celebrates Easter in heaven with Jesus Christ. The timing is pretty remarkable.
Pope Francis was 88 and had recently been hospitalized for more than a month with pneumonia. This is ABC News. The Trump administration calling on the Supreme